This is the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another special episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show. Super excited. I got Mr. Todd Smith from Heyday Now with me. Todd is a seasoned sales veteran. He's been helping companies drive employee engagement and performance management for the last 8 years. As a founder in Heyday Now, he's taken this passion that he has and his years of experience to lead the team and create a platform to help recognize, reward, and drive results for companies, for their clients. We're talking about gamification. We're specifically going to talk about sales. We're going to talk about sales-related items. We're going to cover all of that because of how important things like gamification are and just sales operations in general and Todd's experience. Todd, welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Excited, Jason. Appreciate you having us on, and I'm excited to jump in with you.
Yeah, so when we're talking about gamification, for people who don't know, there's platforms out there that are built, and we'll talk a little bit about where Heyday Now fits into that, that are specifically focused on gamifying results and activities, right? Obviously, you can't control results. You can control activities. You want to gamify that, make that fun. Obviously, some level of gamification is always in place in sales teams, even if it's not like developed out. You know, there's, you know, spiffs and cash and prizes or happy hours, yep, or golfing or whatever it is. There's some level of it. Take me to kind of the experiences you had early on, which will kind of set the stage for this, where you're like, wait a second, we need an official platform. No more messing around, kind of half-assing gamification within organizations. Like, if they had a tool like this, they would get X.
Yeah, I think it started, I mean, really in the call center space where you have these people that are doing the same work all day, every day. I mean, just over and over and over again. And these people, we'd walk in and they're like, yeah, our attrition is 75%. Our attrition is 90%. I'm like, what? Like, you're just turning people over. And it was like, okay, like, we're okay with it. And so we were like, you got to have something that engages these individuals, that keeps them there. Like, what would make me want to be at work and want to perform my job? And for me, super competitive, have been all my life, sports, family, like, it doesn't matter. Like, I want to win. And thinking about the fact of, if I could compete, I'm going to enjoy my job that much more. And so we wanted to create this atmosphere that wasn't just competition for people like me, but really allowed for recognition rewards to happen automatically, where as people are doing things, as they're performing, as they're hitting these objectives, they're recognized and they can see that. There's something that releases that shows me that extrinsic motivation that says, hey, you'd hit it, like, now we're going to reward you. And it works.
So I'm glad that you said that, because when you were leading about, you know, competitive / ultra competitive people like yourself and wanting to have that game, I'm thinking about myself at the other end of the spectrum, where I like to compete. I think it's fun. That doesn't drive me, yeah, right? Leaderboards don't drive me. I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And then I know there's other game player types out there. So I appreciate the fact that you said it's not just about that competition mode, right? That one person, but also the rewards and the recognition. How, and again, not just plugging, you know, Heyday Now, but how is a good gamification or a good game set up to acknowledge what, you know, I've done research and seen like four, you know, game player types, right? Yeah. There's the competitive one, the one that's just got to smash it, all the way to the person who just likes learning and helping other people as their way of playing games. They're that one you play Monopoly with and they're always telling you the rules and telling you how to make the best choice. Right. Even if they're losing, they want to help you be the best you. They're like a coach, yep, not a player. How does someone build for that?
Well, first off, I'm the guy that's like, shh, you can't tell them, like, I'm going to kick them out. But the other part of that is, like, we wanted to create a platform. And I think that anybody that does this, you have to have a platform that engages multiple people in the ways that they need to be engaged. It's the same thing that we go through in leadership of, I can't coach every single person the same way, because we're not motivated the same. What we expect, what we want, what we need is not the same. And everybody is an individual. And so having a platform that allows you to engage these people, some people want to level up. Some people want to get a certain badge or achievement. Some people want to do competition. Some people just want to earn points to spend in a store on swag or something for them. And so we wanted to incorporate all these levels. And then we looked a little bit deeper and we said, well, what about when people aren't in these four walls? There's so much work from home. There's so many people that don't see other people in the organization. I literally went at a previous company an entire year and didn't see anybody in the organization. Like, that's crazy to me, outside of a conversation like this. And so we said, well, if we have all these analytics that show us that people, when they're not in the office, they're on TikTok, Twitter, Insta, and all these other platforms, why would we not bring that into the workforce and have a work-related version of that? And I'm not talking about LinkedIn. I'm talking about where they can create a profile and they can create an image and something that's about them. And so now as they earn stuff, people are like, wait, you went to this place, or I've been there. And it opens up that peer-to-peer interaction that now I'm like, Jason, super cool you hit that goal, but I saw in your background, was that Spain? I was just there 3 months ago. Like, did you go do this? And now we're talking. And now when I have a customer in need, I'm like, hey, buddy, I know we talked about Spain before, but can you help me on this? Because there's a camaraderie there that didn't exist before. And so it's incorporating all those things, the social elements as well as these others.
Well, and I can really appreciate that, because if anyone's been a part of a really solid team, where you can tell the difference, feel the difference. And as a consultant, I go into companies all the time and I can feel the difference between a solid, close-knit team and one that's not. Right. And that team feels like a family. They've got each other's backs. They actually care. They know about their lives. They're willing to do things for them. They're willing to help them out like a family member would, a family member that you like anyway. And not just like, I just want to go to work and do my time and then leave, but it's different. So I'm glad to hear that the platform brings that together. So you mentioned something early on about kind of like what you were looking at call centers and focusing on them, you know, or looking at them and them saying, yeah, we just have this high attrition and they're okay with it. Why do you think companies, call centers, sales teams, obviously that's who this show is mostly focused on, still tolerate that, like a high level of attrition?
A lot of it is, I think it's like one of those things that we've been indoctrinated to. This is just the way it is. Like, this is life of sales. Like, you have people that just don't make it, and we get new ones that will. And in fact, part of that creation is how we recognize people. I mean, you think about in most organizations, we are very good at recognizing, and it's usually the same people, by the way. Like, if I go to any sales org out there and I say, hey, who are your top performers? They'll rattle them off. It's not even like a delay. Oh, Jimmy, Lisa, Nancy, and Bob. Like, well, that's great. You know them. And we're typically very good at recognizing those individuals as well, because I have to. I cannot afford to lose my top performers. But then we have people that we're constantly training, because sales has so much turnover. And so we spend a lot of time with them as leaders. Like, I got to get them ramped up. I got to get them performing quickly. Like, those are the people I spend time with. But that middle, like 80, 90% of people, they never hear from you. They're kind of just there. And so when we looked at it, we're like, that's the reason the turnover exists, is because I know going into it, if I'm a middle class, like you even mentioned, like, it might not be motivated by competition. I can be really good at sales and it not be something that motivates me in competition like someone else. Now, I would struggle and say, well, you're never going to be great. But that's like my own personal opinion, because I like the competitive nature. But when you look at it, how do I engage that other 80%+ of people and have something in it for them that gets them over that hump? Sales has all of these levels and humps that, like, if you can just get here, it's like working out. If you can get to 2 weeks of working out every day, you can almost start to create these habits. And we've seen all these trainings and different things about creating habits within ourselves. It's the same thing. If I get in the habit of earning points, I get in the habit of getting a few more sales a week or a month, like, that becomes contagious and I want more of that. And so we wanted to put that up there and say, hey, I need to reward all these little levels that get you to a bigger level. And if I can do that, I'm going to keep my people, because now they're engaged and they see it constantly that every day I come in, there's something in it for me. The WIFM, what's in it for me every day, instead of what's in it for me when I close the big deal? Because you think about a sale, how many things went into it? Pipeline creation, calls, status, like things that I'm doing constantly to get the end result.
Okay, so that all sounds great. That's the what they could and or should be doing and who they could focus on and how they do it. But why don't they? Why, like, if organization, like, the first step is admitting you have a problem, right? So for organizations out there that you've seen, yes, they know this. They probably know this in theory. They probably read about this. They know they should be doing this in the back of their mind.
Right.
But they're not. Why aren't they? What gets in their way? I should put it that way.
You have a number that cost. Oh, it's going to cost me a bunch of money to do this. I think that's a top priority. Doubt. No, we've tried it. We've done it. And they think that this manual process that I ran for the last 15 years is the same as what they're going to get in an automated process. And so I think the doubt creeps in. And then just the fact that it's work. Like, we're asking for additional work, things for them to do. They have to, there's something in it that they're going to have to put forth effort. And I think that that's, people don't have the bandwidth. A lot of these sales organizations run very tight. Margins are tough. Like, how do I put more effort and more cost into something that I'm not guaranteed to see a success on? I think are some of the main pieces that get lost.
And I think that bandwidth piece is probably the most important, which is the objection slash barrier of, I cannot imagine adding one more tool, one more process, one more thing to do, because I'm already dealing with a whole bunch of stuff that's not fully implemented, a whole bunch of dumpster fires everywhere, and like, I can't stop to put things in place, even if it would help. How much do you think is also those leaders in place, anywhere in the org chart, looking at it like, well, when I was a sales rep, I cared about this. Why doesn't everyone else care about this? And we don't need a game, right? Like, I'm going to just use you as an example, right? If I'm managing you and then you move up, you're like, I'm super competitive. Yeah. Why isn't everyone else super competitive? Let's just do super competitive games. That should be enough, right?
I look at it as, we've seen the commercial in the past, like, oh, just press the easy button. Like, that's what we all want. Like, I'm just going to press this button and it goes. And I think we are motivated to motivate people like us. Like, because if I find people like me, then I know what it's going to do for them. And so instead of finding people like me, oftentimes we try to create people that will be me. And that doesn't work. Like, the class of people that you have that can be very successful is so different and so varying in terms of degrees of how they engage and such. And I think that it's easy for us to know what motivates us and to try to replicate that. And we don't always go with what's the right answer. We go with what is the answer I know or is easy. And those are two different things. Like, I know it means I'm comfortable with it. I can go coach me because I know what it's going to take. And I really think, I mean, that people should be like me. Like, I think that they should be motivated at this degree. And I think that they should have this level of competition. And I think that they should do it in this way. It's very difficult to get out of that because it's simple.
So one of the things that I focus on a lot with individuals and with companies is extrinsic motivations are good. The carrot and the stick are good to a certain degree, but not sustainable, right? People get used to it. They get desensitized to it. They need more and more. And I won't go into the detail here. The goal is really to help people more intrinsically motivate themselves. Where do you see something like your platform or gamification in general making that balance, like tying it into, it's not just me throwing more carrots at you to bribe you to work harder today or this week, but here's what you want, and I want to give you what you want. As long as you win, you're winning for you, not for
me. And that's the piece, right? We all want to change. I don't want to change a KPI for a day. I want to change a behavior. And I think that's what we focus on, is how do I change that behavior for a lifetime instead of the behavior or the KPI for a day? Oh, if I put this out there, I'm going to lift this by 2% today. And what we see is that if I focus on some of those extrinsic motivators and I have the badges and the levels and the status and things that come with that, there is a level that that is going to do for people. Where we kind of take it a step further is we say, how do I get them to internalize that to now I want to do that? And the way that we've done it, it's got to be more than a word. It's got to be an everyday action. But for so long, we've heard performance management, like that's what you need. And performance management is a lot of dashboards and it's showing. And I can show Jason what he's not doing. But it's almost like saying or saying to myself, like, hey, Todd, like, you're terrible. Like, look at how bad you've done on sales this past week. And I'm showing you on a dashboard and there's colors and that's going to change how you perform because there's colors with it and it's bright and it's in your face. In reality, we're saying, like, how do I actually take that performance management into a performance inspiration? I want to inspire people to want to perform, that when the person's not down looking at them from the higher ups and sending them a dashboard, that I have to and want to perform because I see what's in it for me and I see how much better I'm getting, see how much more comfortable I'm getting. I feel good about this, that I just took care of this customer, that I just sold them this deal. Like, it makes me feel something and it's internal. And if I can get them to start to feel some of those things, and they have these external motivators to help guide some of that, now you're hitting them on both fronts, and that's where you take performance to a whole different level.
I love that. I just wrote that down. To not change a KPI for a day, but change a behavior forever. Yeah. That is the best way I've ever heard of my kind of thought process around it as well. Not change a KPI for a day, but change a behavior forever, right? It's, and if we look at other examples, let's say health, you know, someone is unhealthy and you want to get to a healthy state. It's not about doing it once. It's not about a crash diet. It's not a New Year's resolution. It's not about that KPI for a day. Well, I didn't eat ice cream today. It's about behavior forever, right? And you want that in your organization, not just for you, but for your reps, for your agents, for your salespeople, for customers, for anyone.
100%.
I think that's amazing. I love that. If anyone gets anything from this episode, it's that. How do you focus on not just getting a boost in a KPI today, which is basically bribing your people to work harder in the moment, but how do you get them to change their behaviors forever to help them win the game that they are playing? And then
to me, that's
it, right? Like that's
yeah,
that's,
and it's such a critical piece. Like that, what you're talking about, that extrinsic versus intrinsic motivators, like, when you get them to understand that behavior, I'm helping them change that behavior, and that it's not just about me, like that it's about them, that you can take this wherever you go. From this point forward, I'm going to help you adjust the behavior that you have here. And whether you stay at my company for the next 20 years that we want, or you go to the next company that you're going to be awesome at, you're going to take that with you and be able to replicate that over and over again. And that's where it becomes intrinsic. I want to do this regardless of where I am.
And it's funny because when we talked earlier in this conversation about your player style and mine, and I'm not very competitive, I'm not competitive against you. I just want to do really well for me. I don't need to look at the board. I don't really care. You don't have to tell me to make more phone calls. You don't have to tell me how many calls you made versus me. I will crush you, but only for me. I won't even look at the board. I don't care because I know what it'll say. I'll just do it. That's a me motivation, right? It's like driven more in that. So it's fascinating to hear you talk about that. So one of the things that happens is you, as a kind of like service provider working with companies, is you get to see a very cool cross-section of lots of different companies, maybe in different industries, seeing what's out there. What are you seeing that's in general, sales operation, gamification or not, just kind of like from your years of experience in sales and sales leadership, and then what you're seeing out there, what are companies doing right now that's helping them succeed in this current mode that everyone's
doing? Yeah, I think that we went through this kind of period, and if nobody wants to hear the word COVID anymore, but I think that it opened up a lot of people's eyes to what was possible, good and bad. Like, what was possible to achieve? What were the challenges, new challenges that came out of it, and how it's kind of shaped or changed culture in general going forward. And I think that what you're finding is that something like a gamification or inspiring people, whereas before it was this, we want that. Like, eventually we're going to get to that. And anytime, just to be clear, that something's in a want bucket, there's no budget for it, right? Like, we're not doing that. It's a want. Yeah, down the road, next year, didn't make the budget again, following year. And it just is a cycle. But when you move in from a want to you get that need, in terms of what we're going to solve for. And I think that's where customers are, and people and employees and organizations are starting to see, is there is a need to engage, to drive morale, to drive culture, to make people want to be here. Because I don't care if it's customer service or sales or collections. Like, it doesn't matter what world you're speaking to. If I don't take care of the EX, if I don't take care of that employee experience, it is impossible to drive the CX. the customer experience. Like, every organization, you could go out there, and if somebody that takes care of customers doesn't have on their map of customer experience is important, or it's critical, or NPS, or voice of the customer, all these things, they're probably not in business. Like, everyone's trying to focus on that, but how we focus on that matters so much more. And if we don't take care of the employee experience and drive that, those are the people that are in the trenches every day. And if we don't take care of them and motivate them and make them want to be there and want to perform, we're never going to solve for the bigger issue of the overall customer experience. It's the foundation.
And it makes total sense. It kind of goes back to what you led with about organizations you saw that had a really high turnover rate, and that was just okay with them. They're okay with churning and burning their employees. And without even being in that organization, I can imagine or guess, make some pretty good guesses about what their employee experience is like, what their management team is like, what the company culture is like. And again, you can look at organizations that don't care about the customer experience or the sales experience, and they just treat their customers in the same way, right? Like, let's just sell 10 of them, and if two of them stick, that's fine, because we really don't care about them as well. And I think it really ultimately just comes down to that employee experience that you mentioned, because then it will filter down from there. With you and what you've grown and dealt with, what are some of the surprising parts that you have found with scaling a sales operation, both your internal one and ones in the past, maybe ones that you see now that are, you know, wanting to scale and struggling? Like, what's been surprising?
I think that it's the difficulty to find people who want to work, I think, is the first thing. Like, people can interview, and we can go research how to interview and all that, but getting to the roots of, is someone wanting to work? Like, I can take people who want to work and make them great salespeople, because they're going to put in the effort, the time. It may not be as natural as others, but people who want to work, I'm not just talking about want to work and make 100 calls or go and knock on every door. I'm talking about people who want to get better, want to be coached, want to learn. Those are the people that I think it's very hard to find. And like, trying to find people who didn't just learn how to say something in an interview, but it's truly them as an individual. And then when it comes to scaling, man, it's so much about timing. Like, you have these big grandiose like thoughts of like, we're going to go big and we're going to hire 10 people right now. We're going to hire 10 more next quarter. And then you have a sales cycle that's delayed, or what you thought was a 45-day cycle is actually a 90-day, or you have like these pieces that as you start looking at the analytics, they tell a different story than what you thought it was going to be. And I think that's been the piece that I've noticed in my career, that analytics typically tell you the story. Good, bad, or indifferent, they tell you what it is today, and you have to be able to utilize those to make change. And I think that's the hard part, is sometimes, I know for me, sometimes I'm like, no, that can't be right. Like, those analytics, that's not telling the whole story. Oh, these ones have been really good in the pipeline. Like, they're better. They're more qualified. So it's like basically already a verbal. And like, oh, cool. How many verbals do you get paid on? Oh, zero? Like, that's great. I think that those, the scaling and having the right people are the two biggest challenges that we've seen. And then with customers that we've worked with, they're trying to go into different geographies. And just like we've been talking about people, geographies are different. And if I don't understand that geo, if I don't understand those, the people within that geo, and I try to go with the same person that I talk to in this state, I'm going to go over and just that same metric. Like, I've noticed that's a challenge.
Makes sense. And I could see that, right? Just think, okay, it's one size fits all, whether it's a geography, it's a marketing type, even vertical, like when company expands into just other product offerings, they just think it's literally just going to all be the same because it worked over here, so it should work over there, which we as humans like to do that as well, right? So what I did in this one city should work over there. What I do with this one part of my life should work if I do this other part for my health. And I could totally see that. And I have so many questions, so it's slightly bouncing around. Cutting out the answer that you want to say it first, so I'll just say it for you, which is everyone needs a gamification platform or program, right? Whether it's a paid thing or it's just some kind of structured, intentional, proactive gamification program in place, right? Platform or not. So we'll just take that off the table. I know it's going to be your answer because it's my answer as well. Like, you need that. What does a company actually need in advance to have in place, to build, to put there prior to building out a gamification game, even internally, for it to be successful?
I think that there's a couple of things. For me, you got to have, and you alluded to some of this earlier, like if you don't have, you need something like gamification to help you drive, but you've got to have culture. You've got to have people comfortable with saying what's going on and being able to have real conversations. Like there's a way to do it. But if I can't have real conversations with the very people that I work with and the company that I work for, and it's not going to be, let's say it just falls on deaf ears, we're going to do it like we do it, and that's that. You're already up against it. Like, it can't be that. You have to have a willingness to, we want to get better, and we, as in leaders, might not have the answers. And so the companies that I've seen, before they even get to gamification, it's meeting with your lower level employees. When I say lower level, I'm talking about the reps, the agents, the individuals, the front line that are in the trenches every day, meeting with them and saying, guys, help us out. What do you think we need? Why do you think that's important? If you were to make your priority list, and I love people that will come in and compare a priority list on the front line to a priority list of leaders and try to mesh those two together, because they're usually completely different. And so while leaders say, well, we just need more, we just need to make this happen, or this is the priority, and you go to your front lines, the ones that are actually performing and doing it every single day, if those don't line up and there's dramatic differences, it's probably something worth taking a look at. And those are the companies, the ones that can create that, I'm okay having these conversations and making them a regular occurrence, right? It's not just the one big, at our annual conference, you guys come in and talk about it. It's the monthly, quarterly, hey, let's discuss this. What are we needing? What are you seeing? Now I, as a member, already am feeling engaged. I'm making my recommendations. And when we start to implement some of those, culture drives that experience and helps lead to all these other things. And then I think gamification is one of those things, that tool that can just help drive that to an even deeper level.
And why, like, I guess I'm just thinking of, you said the culture piece. I'm just imagining in the absence of a culture, every company has one, but of one that's everyone's bought into, then I guess what happens is everyone's kind of in it for themselves. And any game that you put out there, it's not going to really be effective, because then all the players, the employees, are still just playing their own game, and they're not really looking at the company and their goals. They're just looking at their goals, and they don't really care what happens, right?
That's where these worlds have to come together. I mean, think about the organizations that you've worked for or worked with, like in consulting. Like, when the frontline individuals match with the leadership, that's a pretty powerful piece. And so with that comes, it's not me as a frontline, because I said it needs to happen, it has to happen. And it's not me as a leader, because I said it's going to happen, it has to happen. When those mesh, and I understand why leadership has prioritized something different than what I saw, and they're willing to communicate that to me, I mean, it's just like relationships, it's life, it's things. When communication is at the top, and you're really good at communicating, it solves for a lot of gaps in what we do and what we feel and how we feel and where we go. Like, the communication is the critical component.
I love it. So true. All right. So I have some questions that I know we're going to talk about in the after show part two. I want to talk to you about building your own world-class internal sales experience, but then also where that balance between sales and product development and scope creep and all kinds of stuff come in for anybody who's in the product world or even service world, where you want to do everything for everybody and where's that balance. There's some other questions I have regarding sales and selling. We might even get into some video Zoom conversation that you and I had before. For people who are watching or listening to this, they want to find out more, go to HeyDayNow, HeyDayNow, just like it sounds, HeyDayNow.com. Or, and this is how we connected up as well, is if you're on LinkedIn, anyone watching or listening, look up Todd Smith. There's probably going to be a lot of Todd Smith. So just do Todd Smith, HeyDayNow, or it's /ToddSmith83 on LinkedIn, and connect with you on there. Todd, thanks for being on part one. And
all right, thanks so much, Jason. Appreciate you.
All right. And for everyone watching and listening, tuning in, I appreciate you as well. Hopefully you got some value from this and what Todd and I are talking about to help shift the way sales is done. Because obviously, you know, kind of this conversation, when you tie in company culture, games, focusing on it, treating everyone as an individual employee experience, then it's going to help shift the world of sales from this gross, dirty thing that everyone's kind of tolerated in the past to something customers actually want, while at the same time helping you close more deals and make more money in a way that feels right to you and is effective for your customers. So until next time, until part two, or Todd and I keep talking, thanks for helping fill the world with authentic persuaders.